Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike on the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. Some of you remember me from last week when I sat in for Mike when he was a bit under the weather. Man, he came back, didn't he? But Mike always does. Fast and furious. And Mike and Kathy and little Molly off for a vacation, going to visit the rest of the family. And a well-deserved vacation. Those folks work hard, the two of them. And plus, they got Molly, right? Well, you know, I've been doing talk radio a long, long time. And still, I can't believe that I can't get more organized in that I'll do this then. And I mean, I've even got notes written down. Still doesn't work. So we're all ADD on this bus, folks, so join us. We're going to have some guests. I get guests on when I think the people involved are going to be able to say stuff more than I can. Not just policy wonks or not just people to fill time or so I don't have to keep talking or don't get you on the air, because that's what I like to do. I like to talk to you. 800-989-1480. At 34 after this hour, we're going to be talking with Doug Shaw from Physicians for Social Responsibility, and we're going to talk about this whole idea of politicians sort of glibly bringing back the threat of nuclear war, right? Well, that's all about. And continuing on the theme at 10 o'clock Eastern time, I know you folks are all over the country and all over the world, but my time here in Detroit, Michigan, it's right now about 8 minutes after 9 o'clock. So in about an hour, we're going to be talking with Bill Hartung. He's from the New American Foundation. We're going to talk about the bombing of Nagasaki that happened on August 9th, 1945. And this has been a number of anniversaries crunched right in together. I don't know if how much has been made of this. Probably the powers that be would kind of like to forget it all. But this is also, yesterday was the 40th anniversary of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. There was only two dissenting votes in the entire Senate and House when Congress passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution on August 7th, 1964. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not 66 at all. Yeah, it was 67. Hey, yeah, the war was going fast and furious by then, wasn't it? But still, it cleared the path for escalation of that war in Vietnam. And I don't get it. I don't get it how always you have these Republicans trying to portray the Democrats as weak on military matters, or the perception of the Democrats is one of weakness on military matters. I mean, think about all the wars they've initiated. World War I and they're World War II and Vietnam. So there's lots of them. And, of course, I was thinking, though, about this Gulf of Tonkin resolution and the parallel between the Tonkin claims and the Bush administration's lies that enabled the invasion of Iraq are kind of similar. But, you know, you think about it, you go back into American history, and let's just go back over the last 100 years or so. Spanish-American War, based on lies. Anybody have any, if I'm shocking anybody, please give me a call at 800-989-1480, and we'll talk a little more about it. World War I, what the hell was that all about? That's one of my trick questions for callers. When they always talking about America involved in these good wars to spread freedom, I say, why did we enter World War I? And there's like this silence usually. If you really know a lot, you'll know, you know, you'll mention unrestricted submarine warfare and something called the Zimmerman Note, which isn't even worth going into. No, not Bob Zimmerman, but that was a German ambassador. The Korean War, pretty foggy stuff, but in lots of ways, no real reason for the United States to have fought it. Vietnam, just based on an utter lie, and we were on the side of the people that wanted to continue essentially a colonialism, but under a nationalist government. Central America in the 1980s, all lies, right? Grenada, a lie. Panama, a lie. Gulf War, a little mixed, but mostly a lie, and including a little aspect of it that's somewhat different in that the United States gave Saddam Hussein the go-ahead to invade Kuwait, which was kind of strange. Iraq, a total, absolute lie, of course. So it's not very honorable, anniversaries at all. Well, you know, I didn't think I was going to talk about this, but Barry Bonds has broken the record, right? 756 runs, and he broke the all-time Hank Aaron record of 755. And this guy caught it, right? His name is Brian Cave. I'm sorry, that's not at all. That's who, let me see, what was the guy's name here? 21-year-old Matt Murphy. Yeah, Matt Murphy snagged this valuable piece of sports history on Tuesday night. Now, I never really understood all of this because I was playing softball a couple Saturdays ago here in Detroit, and we had this game which was the Detroit artists versus the Detroit writers. And since I don't do any art, I was in Detroit writers. And I hit a foul ball, and it went into the stands, right? So what happened to that ball? They threw it back. And if they hadn't thrown it back, we would have went in and said, hey, man, give us our ball back. You can't take our ball. But they might have said, if it goes into the stands like in Major League Baseball, it's mine. I don't understand it. I mean, isn't it the property? Maybe this, I don't know if I, listen, email me this, will you? I don't want to get in a big discussion on air about it. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. It does say, I remember I interviewed this guy about 8 years ago, Phil Ozersky. He's the guy that caught McGuire's 70th home run and sold it in 1999 for $3 million. Now they're figuring that this Matt Murphy, who caught the bonds ball, he might have to pay as much as $210,000, even if he doesn't sell it. Well, ain't that a shame, right? Well, there's so much going on, it almost overwhelms me. It raises my anxiety level every time I have to take a look at all of this. I want to get into an aspect of the Democrats' collapse in front of Bush on the wiretapping bill, but you say, whoa, man, we visited that quite a bit. Hopefully, I'll be into it with an aspect that hasn't been mentioned before, or at least will be unique enough to generate some of your calls to 800-989-1480. It's staggering, these Republicans, how, I don't know. I mean, that's why I listen to Mike Malloy. He is never at a loss for words in this, in cases like this. And I'm at a total loss. How can you, define Mitt Romney's remarks today? That when he defended his five sons' decision not to enlist in the military, saying they're showing their support for the country by, quote, helping me get elected. I mean, this is true. This is absolutely true. Now, Romney, he got out of the Vietnam War. How did he do that? Well, he was a missionary. He was a Mormon missionary, and he had a high draft number as well. But he was another one of these chicken hawks. I think most of you listening to this broadcast have heard that phrase before. And there used to be a list at the New Hampshire Gazette, but that's a link that I can't seem to find anymore. Again, if anybody has an active link to the astounding list of Republican chicken hawks, men that were more than qualified, ready, and able, one would think, to fight in a war in Southeast Asia that they supported, but instead scammed out of it in any way possible. Bush, being a rich kid, he was able to scam his way into the Air National Guard, went AWOL, you know all that story. Cheney famously said, he got five deferments, and he said he had better things to do or more important things. Yeah, rather than killing people or getting killed or getting maimed or coming back an emotional basket case like so many of the people of that generation that fought there did. Now, let's see. The good news, he says, is that we have a volunteer army, and that's the way we're going to keep it. Romney told 200 people in this abbey near the Mississippi River. This is in Ohio. My sons are all adults, and they've made decisions about their careers, and they've chosen not to serve in the military in active duty, and I respect their decision in that regard. Well, he's got a great dad, huh? He added, one of the ways my sons are showing support for our nation is helping me get elected because they think I'd be a great president. Dad, you'd make a great president. His sons range in age from 27 to 26. Now, remember, the United States Army did not make its quota, although they're expecting to meet their recruiting goal for July. They didn't do it for May or June. So the sons could have been pretty helpful there, right? Well, the woman who asked the question of him said she was a member of the Quad City Progressive Action for the Common Good and the sister of an Army major who had served in Iraq. She was asked whether she was satisfied. Of course not, she said. He told me the way his son shows support for our military and our nation is to buy a Winnebago and ride across Iowa and help him get elected. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. We'll be right back on the NoVam Radio Network after these. 800-989-1480.
need this hopeless feeling like I need a hole in my head.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby, sitting in for Mike, 800-989-1480. For the break, I was talking about Mitt Romney and how he defended his son's decision not to enlist in the military. Well, enough other sons are apparently to meet the recruiting goals for July. Officials are now offering a $20,000 bonus to recruits who sign up by the end of September. And they expect to get almost 10,000. Can they do that? I mean, is 20,000 enough to make people risk life and limb? I think the wounded are up, depending on how you count them in terms of severity, but as high as 35,000. The death toll today is 3,681. And we might talk a little about the battles that are going on if we have enough time. You can go to iCasualties.org. iCasualties.org. And get the latest update on this miserable slaughter that Bush has engendered. Let's see here. SK writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Mike Malloy claims that if you were bothered enough that you would tell some cool protest dissent stories from the 60s. Consider this my first attempt in bugging you. I think everyone would be lifted by some stories about things people did in the past that led to real change. Thanks and have a great show. Well, after we dosed with LSD and walked down to the anti-war demonstration, having just been involved in a free love session, we're eating some brown rice and I don't know what to say. But, So Romney, this one, his dad, George Romney, was a candidate for president as well, but he admitted he had been brainwashed about Vietnam back in the day, and somehow that, rather than people saying, yeah, right, we were all brainwashed. Well, we weren't all, just like we aren't all and weren't all brainwashed about Iraq. That was one of the few things that he said that I thought, wow, this is a man willing to admit his mistakes. Well, okay, let's take some calls right now because we've got a few minutes in here, and then we're going to get to one of our guests. Let's go to Gary, listening on the internet in Fort Lauderdale. Gary, it's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. Hi.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I just wanted to say it's a real treat to hear you. You're excellent.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You know, we down here in South Florida just got a chance to watch a television show, a one-hour special about Venezuela and Hugo Chavez.
Really?
Yeah, it was broadcast by a local TV station. We have a large Latin population down here, and I think it was mostly for their interest.
And it must have been pretty negative.
Well, actually, it was 50-50.
Okay.
They even had some interviews at the end of the show with two Chavez supporters and two detractors.
Really?
They actually tried to make it pretty fair. I mean, after what I saw of it, I loved it. I'd much rather be in Venezuela than the United States.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been in Venezuela. I was in Caracas, and the country has tremendous problems. You can't fix what's been done to countries by systematic looting over since the last 500 years. And I'm not even 100% sure whether he can be successful, given the magnitude of the problems that country faces. But one thing, I mean, he's not a dictator. The United States has many more political prisoners than Venezuela does. I would think that if you were poor, probably the best place in the world to be would be the two countries that a lot of Americans have a pretty negative opinion of.
Cuba and Venezuela.
Absolutely, absolutely. Poor, for instance, in Mexico, think about that. People there live on, half the people in Mexico live on $5 a day.
And then they run over here. Well, this is what I wanted to tell you. The detractors were naming all of the characteristics about him that they thought were negative.
Uh-huh.
And every single one of them, I said, it sounds just like George Bush. It was amazing.
Like name one or two, because they probably were incorrect about Chavez. But go ahead. What did they say?
The way
remember?
He controls the media to work to his favor.
You know, I'll tell you, even though he closed down that TV station, that was actually one of the coup plots.
They're not closed. According to the TV show, they're still operating.
They have cable. I mean, essentially, they're close to what they were. But Venezuela today has the most virulent anti-government media of any country in the entire world. There, you can't believe the vitriol that spills out against the government, accusing Chavez of every crime under the sun on a regular basis. I'm even forgetting the names of the public of the publications there. But in terms of an opposition media, it is amazing. And still, Chavez commands like 70% popularity ratings, and he won the election. I mean, Bush lost the election. Bush stole the election, right? He lost the first one, stole the second one. I mean, I guess it means he stole them both, right?
And he should be impeached during this one.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the report. Have a nice day. Or night, I guess it is. This is not being delayed. Here's Dan listening on Sirius Satellite. Dan, I'm going to have to put you on hold, and we'll get back to you. Thank you. I hear our music coming up here. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get Doug Shaw on. He is with Physicians for Social Responsibility. Now, social responsibility, boy, wouldn't that be nice? But we even have Democratic Party candidates waving the nuclear bomb around. So I want to get with Doug and talk with him on his view of this all, because Physicians for Social Responsibility was founded by Helen Caldicott, who hopefully many of you know, who's been one of the most vigorous anti-nuclear campaigners. So this is going to be interesting, and this is information I want to know. Hopefully you do as well. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. I made the remark a little earlier that the list of Republican and right-wing media and religious chicken hawks, those men that actively supported the war in Vietnam but scammed out of it, had disappeared from my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. And let's see, Mary and Kathy and JB and T all sent in links. Unfortunately, they're way too long to read on the air. So I'll put it on my site tomorrow and I'll remind you again. Well, as I said at the opening of this broadcast, that there's some ignominious anniversaries this month. And it's on Monday, it was the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima, and tomorrow the atomic bombing of Nagasaki. And nuclear weaponry is back on the agenda. Barack Obama saying he would remove them as an option in the Pakistan-Afghanistan region. The Republicans all falling over themselves, saying they consider attacking Iran with nuclear weapons. Let's talk with the Director of Security Programs at Physicians for Social Responsibility. It's Douglas B. Shaw, and Physicians for Responsibility has always been in the forefront of alerting us to the dangers of nuclear war. Doug Shaw, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Peter Werbe. Are you with me, Doug? Oh, you know what? I forgot. I got to do this, don't I? Yeah, I know, but I got to press his phone. All right. Sorry, Doug. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much, Peter.
I'm new at this. After a while, I'll get the technology down, I guess. Tell us your feeling when you've been watching these debates and how suddenly nuclear attacks are on the agenda. They're being taken off as the table as an option. They're being put back on. There's threats of it. What does that all mean to you?
Well, it strikes me as incredibly unreflective, Peter. It strikes me that that folks aren't, even in this week of the 62nd anniversaries of the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they aren't recalling the historic fact of those bombings. And what we learned from them, that nuclear weapons are massively indiscriminate. The Department of Energy itself estimating that as many as 200,000 or more people ultimately died as a result of the Hiroshima attack alone. Almost all of them civilian. It's the nature of the weapons is inconsistent with our our war aims, our way of life now, and it's up to physicians, really, what our role in this debate, as we see it, is to help the public and policymakers understand what the day after the next use of a nuclear weapon would be like in an age of global media and in an age of instant communication with different parts of the world. The use by an American president of a nuclear weapon on a populated area would be truly unimaginable, and it's our job to help people understand the scale of death and destruction that would actually be wrought by it.
Well, what do you make of these Republicans rattling the nuclear saber? Is it just for their base, hoping that they'll bring the animals out of the cave to vote for them, and wouldn't really function like that when it if they got to the presidency?
Well, that's my hope, but my fear would be that we've actually lost track of what these weapons do, that we think that they're just sort of an ultimate military option as opposed to something that's almost transcends the definition of weapon at all. There's very few military objectives that are that would merit such a large explosion, and at the same time, there's almost no circumstance to which they would be proportional.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're looking for a proportional response, there's really no possibility of proportionality unless we, the United States ourselves, are being threatened by the use of a nuclear weapon or one of our allies. Only the threat of a nuclear use would be proportional to a nuclear use.
Well, Doug Shaw, I would I mentioned that I was going to talk about this to someone I knew, and they said, "Boy, why are you going back to ancient history?" And one, I didn't even think of your answer. I mean, it's a lesson as to the results of it. But also, I thought of a more general response, was that the mythologies that govern the popular perceptions of how the United States has functioned in the world over the last, I don't know, a couple hundred years, I think needs great examination. And I guess or maybe you would agree, I was going to say I would take issue with you to some extent when you said that the atomic bombings of the city were inconsistent with the war aims. I mean, at that moment, that both of those were shot off to force Japan to surrender to the United States, fearful that Japan was about to surrender to the Soviet Union, figuring that they could get a better surrender deal.
Well, I'm actually, Peter, thank you so much for helping me clarify. I'm not trying to argue about the bombings in 1945, except to say that they were massively destructive and demonstrated the indiscriminate nature of these weapons and draw into great question their utility for military objectives today that are relevant to what's been called the global war on terrorism.
Now, I suspect people that listen to this program mostly are know this argument, but I got to believe there's a lot of people listening, particularly to what I just said. And wait a minute. We had to drop these atomic bombs on these fanatics who never would have surrendered, who, if we did invade, it would have cost 1 million American lives. Where that figure came from, I'll never know. But so many Americans repeat it. And that actually we did the Japanese a favor, because if the United States would have invaded, that the loss of life through conventional means, like the conventional bombings that were going on, were catastrophic. The bombing, like the Curtis LeMay-led bombing of Tokyo. So that in a way, this was actually an act of altruism, that it ended the war quickly and it saved both American and Japanese lives, which I think is just a load of BS.
Well, I'm not able to speculate any better than you have about what could have alternatively happened in 1945. It's hard for me to imagine today that the use of a nuclear weapon in Afghanistan or Pakistan, for instance, would bring Osama bin Laden to his knees and lead to a surrender that would be effective. But that's the question at hand. Is the use of a nuclear weapon something that would meet our objectives, our national objectives today? And in considering whether or not it would, we need to consider the loss of 200,000 lives from the single use of what would today be an extraordinarily small nuclear weapon, the Hiroshima weapon, in the range of 12 kilotons, as opposed to some weapons, 20 times or more as large today.
Well, why is the Bush administration so committed to expanding our nuclear arsenal? I mean, when we have no, it's not like we're facing the Soviet Union. I mean, it virtually is going to ramp up, in fact, a nuclear arms race with China, the only possible major power that exists that could turn out to be an adversary if we let it.
Well, Peter, the decision to build new nuclear weapons is indeed very puzzling. And that's why we're extraordinarily fortunate that Senators Dianne Feinstein and Susan Collins have offered the Nuclear Policy and Posture Review Act, which would give us a 3-year pause before we begin building a new generation of nuclear weapons that the administration has proposed. So I'm particularly hopeful that we'll take advantage of this idea of a 3-year pause and think through what sort of a nuclear arsenal the United States needs for the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, the co-founder of your organization, Doug Shaw, Physicians for Social Responsibility, who's Helen Caldicott, who I've had the pleasure of interviewing a number of times, always feels like we're virtually on the edge. I mean, she's not Chicken Little. I mean, I don't think she says it's going to happen tomorrow, but the potential of a nuclear conflagration still remains very possible, and that I don't think people realize that cities are still targeted by atomic weaponry in Russia. I mean, they're not on hair trigger, but they could be at any given second.
Well, quite a number of nuclear weapons are still on high alert with no appreciable reason for it, but no effort made to respond to that challenge to lower those alert levels in a reciprocal and verifiable way. We are going to lose all of our verification rights over reductions of Russian nuclear weapons in 2009. The administration has stated its intention to allow the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty to expire in 2009. And after 2012, all of our new negotiated numerical limits will expire. So we're on a path to allowing to expire all of the progress that the end of the Cold War allowed us to make, the things that we couldn't negotiate with the Soviets for decades. They would never allow on-site inspection. And that was what held up the process and led to the arms race, was the Soviets wouldn't allow on-site inspection. We've got it today, and we're about to give it up.
What should we do? Is it whenever I listen to Helen Caldicott, it scares the hell out of me. I mean, she has suggestions as well. What does Physicians for Social Responsibility suggest? One thing, give us your website address.
It's www.psr for Physicians for Social Responsibility.org. www.psr.org. The first thing we suggest is the Nuclear Policy and Posture Review Act of Senators Feinstein and Collins, that will allow us a 3-year pause to think about what sort of nuclear arsenal the United States actually needs. Step 2, we need to extend the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty immediately so we will continue to verify negotiated limits on strategic nuclear arsenals. And then we need to expand that process to include the other states, the other nuclear weapon states and threshold states, so that we can get a handle on the number of nuclear weapons that exist in the world and get some sort of verification around, to the extent possible, around this extraordinarily indiscriminate, massively destructive capability.
Doug Shaw, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Thanks for all the information.
Thank you so much, Peter.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too.
PSR.org, it's got a lot of incredible information on it. When we come back, if you want to talk more about that, or my contention that there was absolutely no military reason whatsoever to drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And we'll talk a little bit after 10 o'clock about the bombing of Nagasaki. Every military leader, Eisenhower, LeMay, the head of submarine warfare, said absolutely no reason to do it. LeMay wanted to bomb, you know, he wanted to bomb Vietnam back into the Stone Age. He wanted to bomb Japan back into the Stone Age as well with conventional weapons. It was the first shot of World War III, and the civilians of those cities paid the price. Absolutely no reason whatsoever militarily to do that. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. It's the Nova M Radio Network. I'll get your calls when we come back, 800-989-1480. Hi, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. The Nova M Radio Network, 800-989-1480. I don't even know why I read this email. It came into calltalkyes at yahoo.com, where you can email me. It's from Tina. She said she listened to the show for the first time. She said, poor grammar is one of my picadillos. In speaking about playing baseball in a foul ball, you said we should have went. I think I said we should have went into the stand. Well, you should have said we should have gone. A little thing, really, but one that speaks volumes. It's really an affront to listeners when so-called public speakers butcher the language. It sends the message that correct grammar doesn't matter. I hear enough poor grammar from the kids on the bus. I don't need to hear it on the radio. I guess I'll go back to NPR, which is too bad. Nationalistic Pentagon Radio, right? Hey, Tina. Give me a break. I never graduated college. I said, went, gone, all that lay. I can't get any of that. Come on. It's what we're talking about. It's important, not this. Now, let me see. We had somebody on the air. Maybe he went away, though, that barely got to say hello. All right. Here's Kelly. She's listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Texas. Kelly, hi. It's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, how you doing? Hate to disappoint you. I'm a guy.
No, actually, I know a guy named Kelly. Sure.
Cool. Hey, I just wanted to comment. You know, you were bringing up things about Vietnam and then World War One and World War Two, and you know, going to World War Two, if you hone in on distractions in war and how war is possible to happen, it's usually when the American public is sleeping. And right now, we've all fallen asleep. What we have is a huge Reichstag fire. Not by Adolf Hitler this time, but by George W. Bush. And the distractions go anywhere from his own sacrificial lambs like Scooter Libby to allowing New Orleans to still be an article and a headline of distraction because they don't fund anything going on there, to this bridge, to the miners. And the news is just buying into these things that are being induced by the Bush administration in so many ways. And the biggest one, and I'd love to see a timeline. You know, if there's going to be a documentary one day, they should put a timeline together showing all the things that come up where we're about ready to do something to the Bush administration, and then why they pull back, because what distracted us and took the eye off the ball. And I bet we could find not just hundreds, but thousands on a monthly basis throughout the United States.
Well, they're masters, though. You would think, every day I look and I'm thinking, why doesn't this bring like a million people out in every big city in America and hundreds and thousands out in the medium-sized and small ones? I mean, this French philosopher Jean Baudrillard said, maybe that'll get me back in the good graces of Tina that I'm cringing, but that said, the only scandal is that there is no scandal. And there's a couple of things going on. Is most of us are so caught up in the quotidian. I'm really stretching now to get in the good graces of Tina. You know, daily life, and it's gotten harder and harder, and more anxiety producing. So we kind of focus just on our daily lives. And the other thing is that any real alternative to life as it is, politics as it is, has been eradicated. So we've got the dominant ruling party, and then we've got this other one that we thought was going to alleviate all of our problems, really take
right
on the monsters that are controlling us, and they've dropped the ball in so many regards. I mean, they're doing some decent things and that are worthwhile, but that there's not the frontal assault on what is a frontal assault on the Constitution and our standard of living and everything right down the line. And I don't expect that from the Democrats. I always expect the Democrats to give us a little breathing room and then have us do it ourselves. But then we just kind of get back into, the sleep mode again.
Wasn't it disappointing to hear Hillary Clinton the other night say that you don't always say what's on your mind and what you know is right, because it distracts and it comes back to, you know, basically she was saying it'll come back and bite you or get you. And I was saying to myself, what she's really saying is you don't really say what's on your mind and what you would really do and how you would really do things like George Bush did to us. You don't say those things. What you do is you hold them back and then you expose them to the country once you get enough votes and you get an office. And it's just sickening when I heard her say that the other night. The only one telling the truth right now is Dennis Kucinich.
Sure.
And he's seen as radical, but he's the only one making sense. How come people can't see that? I don't understand that.
I'll tell you, as long as we have politics that are based around personalities like this, and they're going to look everything from their cleavage to their religion and everything under the sun, we're never going to get anywhere. Because just, I'm 8 miles from another country, right? You're not, terribly far away yourself. But, me from Canada. And there they have a party. They have the New Democratic Party that probably most of us would be supporting, I think. They have the Liberal Party. You have the Conservative Party, and the personalities. I mean, they do a little with personalities, but the main thing that counts is what is the party platform, and it's committed to that. I'm not trying to make them out to be the greatest thing since sliced bread in politics, but at least you know ostensibly where these parties stand, and oftentimes when they veer from it, the they get punished at the polls. We got to take our top of the hour break, Robert. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. And we're going to be back. So if you're on the line right now, Jimmy and Greg and Matt, see, some of you are already saying, oh, I don't want to hang on that line. Come on, hang on. We'll get you on the air. We do have a guest at the top of the hour. I want to continue this discussion about the unnecessary, unwarranted atomic bombing of the Japanese cities that happened in 1945. This is the anniversary tomorrow of the bombing of Nagasaki. And joining us will be Bill Hartung from the New America Foundation, and I think he'll have some interesting things to tell us as well. So hang on. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. This is the Nova M Radio Network. 800-989-1480 is our call-in number, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned for all the information at the top of our hour. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werbe, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan. Mike and Kathy and little Molly off for the next 3 days, and I'll be sitting in his place. Thanks for joining me. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. We've been talking about a number of things, even including my grammar, or at least my butchering of grammar, according to Tina, but some substantive things as well, including the anniversaries of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. One, the anniversary, the 42nd anniversary on Monday, and tomorrow the anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki. A lot of people have been writing into me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I don't have a staff here, so I'm trying to get all this myself. It's hard for me to get all the emails. I definitely will read all of them, so keep sending them. I don't know if I can read all of them, but there's too many, for one thing. But someone who signed themselves The Witch wrote, I'm so glad you're talking about this tonight, Pete. Even with your guest, I noticed the specter of the ultimate unimportant question reared its head. That unimportant question is, should we have dropped the bomb? Well, let's go to William D. Hartung. Bill Hartung is the director of the Arms and Security Project at the New America Foundation. And Bill Hartung, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to learn to do this yet. Bill, hi, you're on the air. Sorry.
No problem. I want to read some of the emails, too.
Okay. Well, this threw me for a loop, but now I see through this rather long email what the witch is getting at. But is that she said that when she went to this museum in Hiroshima that there wasn't a blame game going on, that whether we should or we shouldn't have isn't very important. I've always thought it was an extraordinarily important question. What's your feeling about it?
Well, a lot of the Japanese survivors are focused on the idea that it should never happen again, that we should get rid of nuclear weapons entirely. And part of how they do that is just forcing people to witness the devastation that it caused to human beings and to the environment. So I think, whether they say it explicitly or not, it's clear that it's felt that the United States shouldn't have done it, which is also my position.
Well, now the bombing of Hiroshima, I mean, we kind of know the either the official or popular justifications for it. I was saying that I didn't think there was any justification for it whatsoever. Nagasaki, the bombing of that primarily civilian city, really sort of befuddles me. What was the official rationale for doing it? The fact that they didn't surrender?
Yes. Basically, the argument was that absent using these weapons to force a Japanese surrender, that there would have to be a U.S. land invasion that could result in as many as a million troops being killed. And so after a few days of after Hiroshima not receiving a surrender from the Japanese, they dropped the second bomb on Nagasaki. Now, at that point, there was no doubt that civilians were the primary victims and, you know, in the tens and hundreds of thousands. So that's why I think it was in many ways even more immoral than the original decision, because there was no mistaking that this was a weapon of a new kind and more destructive than anything that had been seen before by, you know, by many times over.
Well, the Americans knew that Japan was defeated, that the island was surrounded, that there were ongoing conventional bombings that were doing immense devastation, that they would not have to invade. The head of the submarine warfare said they would surround the island and starve it to death. So this was not really a military decision at all, was it?
No, I think it was a political decision about how soon they wanted to surrender. And one argument has been, which I think has some weight, that they wanted to keep the Soviets from coming in a big way and capturing territory in that part of the world. And it ends up the Soviets began to fight on that front on the 9th, the same day that the Nagasaki bomb was dropped. And a lot of accounts since unearthed in the Japanese and Russian archives indicate that that was probably a more significant factor in Japan's decision to surrender. It was the prospect of fighting on two fronts.
Was the Soviet Union impressed? I mean, that was one of the reasons they didn't want to have like a demonstration bombing and all. But were the Soviets frightened to the extent that they didn't seek territorial gains in Eastern Europe? And I guess not. I guess it didn't work.
Well, no, I'd say the main effect was they decided they better get their own.
Yeah.
And it took them, you know, a few years to do it. Truman had a discussion with J. Robert Oppenheimer, the director of the U.S. Atomic Weapons Program, and said, well, how long do you think it'll take the Russians, the Soviets, to get a nuclear weapon? And Oppenheimer said he had no idea, and Truman said, well, I think never. So I think they thought that this was going to be a permanent advantage of theirs, and they were trying to figure out the best way to exploit it. And fortunately, in this case, they did it at the cost of you know, the people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah, a bad call. Bill Hartung from the New America Foundation is my guest on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werbe. And so today, the toothpaste is out of the tube. And we were talking, of course, with Physicians for Social Responsibility, who think about disarmament all the time. I wonder if the toothpaste can be put back in the tube. I mean, the nuclear weaponry is spreading.
Well, there's been, I think, more, I don't know if you call it success, but there's been more effective measures taken to slow the spread than would have been anticipated. In the 60s, President Kennedy thought that there'd be two or three dozen nuclear weapon states by now, and it's bad enough that we have eight, but the Non-Proliferation Treaty and some of the arms control agreements have, you know, kept a lot of countries that have the capacity to build nuclear weapons from building them. Iran and North Korea, Iran's program is basically a nuclear power program at this point, and North Korea is now negotiating to get rid of theirs, and so far those on this round, at least, those negotiations seem to make some progress. So I think there's some hope, but I think unless the two biggest powers, Russia and the United States, which have about 90% of the world's nuclear arsenals, unless they get serious about reducing theirs, then a lot of other countries are going to still point to that as a reason why they need their own weapons. In the case of Iran, if the U.S. keeps threatening to overthrow their government and saying all options are on the table, meaning the nuclear option as well as conventional invasion, you know, I think it's sort of almost asking them to build nuclear weapons in a strange sort of way.
Well, sure. The situation of Iraq and North Korea, if you don't have nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction, you get invaded. If you do, they say, they look into the vacuum of his eyes and say, you know, hey, can we make a deal, right? And so it would seem to be an inducement to have them. We just have about a minute or so left. Who, in your estimation, or which country is the most dangerous in terms of its nuclear weaponry?
Well, I would say the biggest issue now is probably India and Pakistan if they were to get into another tussle over Kashmir, because I don't think they have developed the communications to make sure that somebody doesn't make a mistake. I think the fact that the United States wants to build new nuclear weapons is a danger in terms of global proliferation, and thankfully Congress has defunded for the last 2 years the Bush administration's efforts to do that. But I think in a sense we're unfortunately the quote-unquote leaders in this area, and I think that leads to a lot of the other dangers that we see.
Mm-hmm. Also, both what I'm fearful of, you may be as well, is a change of government in Pakistan or in Russia that would bring to power a government extraordinarily hostile to the United States, and that certainly exists. Those political formations certainly exist in Russia.
Yes, and if it's a broad enough base, you might bring along some of the people who know the secret codes, who know how to deploy these things, and that would be a disaster.
Well, I want to thank you for being on this segment of the show. William D. Hartung, Bill Hartung, my guest. You can go to, he's the director of the Arms and Security Project at the New America Foundation. The website is newamerica.net. Thanks so much for being on the broadcast. I appreciate
it. Yes, I appreciate you having me.
All right. Good night, Bill.
Good night.
All right. Stay tuned and stay on the line. Come on. Patience, people. Every time we say, okay, we'll be right back, everybody hangs up. From now on, right up till midnight Eastern time, we're going to be taking your calls. So it's you and me, Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. The number is 800-989-1480. This is the Nova M Radio Network, and there's a number of things I want to talk about as well. I see that you're suggesting some of them, but get into an aspect of wiretapping that I don't think has been mentioned, the threat to the U.S. dollar from China, and also that that debate with the Democrats, which I didn't watch, but you might have some comments on it. I read a lot about it. All right, we'll be right back after these. Hang on. All right, I guess we're rocking the night away on the NovaM Radio Network. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Our call-in number here, 800-989-1480. We just had a conversation with Bill Hartung of the New America Foundation talking about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So far, myself and the two guests I've had in the show and a few of you and emailers at calltalkyes@yahoo.com have agreed that the bombing was absolutely unnecessary, a political decision, not a military necessity. Ward Wilson, who is the author of the article, The Winning Weapon, Rethinking Nuclear Weapons in Light of Hiroshima, says, my historical research shows that the nuclear bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki had apparently little or no impact on the Japanese decision to surrender. In the spring of 1945, Japan was already largely defeated, and Japan's leaders knew it. It was the Soviet declaration of war on August 9, 1945, the same day as Nagasaki, that forced the Japanese to surrender. Many of the Japanese cities bombed that summer. There were 66 others suffered similar damage to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was done with conventional bombing. Historians often point to Japanese statements made after the war as proof that the U.S. nuclear attack on Hiroshima was decisive. Many of them say that's why they surrendered. However, Japanese leaders had motives for concealing the truth. The bomb offered a convenient explanation to soothe wounded Japanese pride. The defeat of Japan was not the result of leadership mistakes or lack of valor, but it was the result of an unexpected advance in the science by Japan's enemy. It was the first shot of World War III, another blast against the Soviet Union. Tom in Kansas City writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I lived in Japan for 10 years and have been to Hiroshima twice during the bombing anniversary. 2 points for any listeners who have never been there. Setting aside the language and some cultural differences, you'd be amazed at how similar average Japanese people are to you. Also, the city of Hiroshima puts out a DVD that talks about the effect of the bomb to this day. I've seen it and think it should be mandatory viewing in all the schools worldwide. Now, as I said earlier, someone had asked me, why was I dredging up all this history and was I just trying to make America look bad? We live in a world dominated by mythologies about ourselves and the nation state. And the reason we keep getting in these jackpots, these quagmires like Vietnam or Iraq, is because we believe these mythologies. And we, in fact, I'm going to play, I'll do it at the 11 o'clock hour Eastern time, this little piece by George Carlin, the comedian, who's really a social, humorous social commentator, isn't he? It's called Who Owns You? Some of you, I think, may have heard it before. It's one of his HBO shows that he did. It's from that. But he talks about the need for critical thinking. And what we're talking about here is critical thinking. Listening to this broadcast with Mike day after day, it engages us in critical thinking. Hopefully, I'm doing the same. You do that for me. But if we don't understand our history, well, you know, what, you know the old cliche, we're condemned to relive it, and the United States relives it over and over and over again. All right, let's go to our phones, and let's get Jimmy listening on Sirius Satellite in Kalamazoo. You've been waiting a long time. Thanks for your patience, Jimmy, and welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you.
Oh, yeah, Peter Werby. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, the reason I got a Sirius Satellite radio so many years ago was to get Malloy and Peter Werby on the old IE America Radio.
All right, that's when we started.
1-800-TALK-YES. I used to call you guys all the time. I don't know if it was good or bad, but I just get through right away every time.
Well, that's good. Well, I think it was bad. I don't think a lot of people were listening. And Mike and I think I said that the first night I was on last week. When Mike and I started with 14 stations apiece, and when we wound up, I think he had two and I had one, or he had one and I had two. Every time we called Bush a liar or something like that, boom, we'd lose an affiliate.
Yeah, well, Malloy came from WLS, and you came from WRIF.
Right.
And IE America, that's also where Tom Hartman came from. And you guys brought me through.
Well, that's good.
And those were dark days back then.
Now we are at least the dominant opinion. How come we don't have the dominant politics? I think that's one of the things that we really need to address.
That's because the Democrats aren't the SOBs that the Republicans are. See, the Republicans have a killer instinct.
They do.
They don't go out. They don't just want to win. They want to destroy the enemy. They want to. They want to destroy them. And the Democrats, for better or for worse, they don't have that. They don't have that killer instinct.
Well, you know, I don't know that. I understand fully what you're saying. I don't even know if you have to have that killer instinct. I mean, Bush
well,
is on the road.
Republicans have it.
Well, they do. Even when their popularity is at an all-time low, or it's like 28%. The Dems roll over for a guy that almost everybody in America hates.
Yeah,
you know, Malloy's little thing about, if I told you tonight how much I hate these people, that represents the feeling of the entire American people, and the Democrats rolled over for this guy on the wiretapping bill. Jimmy, let me get one more call in before our break. I appreciate you joining me, and welcome back. It's really good to hear from you. Here's Matt listening to The Quake in Oakland. Matt, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, and thank you very much for addressing this subject of nuclear warfare and the folly of nuclear weapons. This issue has always been really important to me because my dad was an anti-nuclear activist, and one of our family friends is Tadatoshi Akiba, who's the mayor of Hiroshima.
Really?
And I wanted to quickly offer up a couple of recommended books for your listeners. I think one of the things that doesn't happen enough on talk radio is recommendation of books.
Wait, so, we got about 20 seconds. Tell me quick.
All right, Martin Sherwin, A World Destroyed. It's the book that kind of broke.
And what else?
All right, Bertrand Russell, Common Sense in Nuclear Warfare. That's kind of an older book.
All right, we're out of here.
A good film.
Thank you, Matt. Got it. We'll catch you on the other side. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480. Everybody knows.
over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows.
Leonard Cohen on the Mike Malloy Show. I love it. Peter Werby substituting for Mike. Mike and Kathy and little Molly off on vacation. This is the NovaM Radio Network. The call-in number is 800-989-1480. Sometimes when Ian Huff back in Phoenix is playing this music, I think I'm just going to listen to the music. Hey, we were talking about, at least Matt was advising of some books to read on this subject of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. One writer I've always gone to is Gar Alperovitz. Gar Alperovitz, okay? And it's Alperovitz, and his book is The Decision to Use the Atomic Bomb. The decision to use the atomic bomb and the architecture of an American myth. And that's what I think is the important aspect of it here, why we want to keep reexamining it. Not so we can beat ourselves up for something that was done 62 years ago, but so that we don't keep being ruled by myths. That clear thinking, that creative thought, that skepticism, that learning from history dominates the way we consider what the political and military elites are telling us. Doesn't mean they're always wrong. Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems like they always are. I may have said last week that my way of looking at the news, when somebody's on television and they're wearing a suit, I stole this from my wife, actually. She says, you can always tell people if they're lying if they're wearing a suit, right? Well, I know. That's a little cruel. Some of the people we like, or some of the people you like, at least, wear suits. I don't even own a suit. Right? I didn't graduate college. I got bad grammar, as I even forgot her name, charged me in that email. Anyway, let's just go a little into this wiretapping stuff. And I know you say, well, hey, man, we've talked about it and talked about it. And we were talking about how the Dems rolled over. It actually was passed by all the Republicans who have learned absolutely nothing, who are sticking by this man who most of them know has led their party. They don't care about the country. They don't care about the world. They don't care about the Iraqis. They don't care about the American soldiers there. They care about their party. Their party has been led down the road to disaster, political disaster, by George W. Bush, and here they stick with him. But they were joined by 16 Democrats in the vile Lieberman, the so-called independent, whereas the majority of Democrats, 34 of them, opposed. And Senator Johnson, who is I can't think of his first name suddenly, but the guy from the Dakotas who had that brain hemorrhage and now is actually going home, and he'll probably be back in the Senate in a little while. Okay, so Bush signed this into law, the legislation that expands his authority. Now, the Attorney General, I don't want to go over all this because most of you know this, the Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, now has the power to issue these orders to wiretap. These warrantless wiretaps. Now, here's a guy you can trust, right? He's non-political. He's non-partisan. He always tells the truth. This is absolutely amazing. But the law went far beyond what the administration said it had to fix. And essentially, that it alters the legal limits, the limits that were on the government's ability to monitor millions of phone calls and email messages that go in and out of the United States. Now, this that was being done by the Bush administration, which was in violation of the law governing this, these warrantless taps were illegal and they were impeachable offenses. Now, through 16 Democrats, they've made it possible for Bush to get himself off of one of the high crimes and misdemeanors for which he should be standing in the bar of the Senate on trial for these crimes that he's committed. You know, there is the Fourth Amendment. I always used to think when I would read, or when people would talk about the Constitution, the Founding Fathers, I was always a real cynical kid, and I'd think, yeah, you know, they're always trying to shove this patriotism down our throat, and it's like Bible school, you know, read the Constitution, the Federalist Papers. These guys were really amazing. I mean, they had some problems in that they stole all the land from the native people and destroyed their culture and set up the context for millions of them dying. But in terms of a political document and understanding the problems in Western government, these brutal, repressive, religion-bound administrative apparatuses, the governments of Europe, that they knew how they'd limit it in a totally modern and new document. People say, oh, they got some of it from the Iroquois and all that. But you read through this thing, you think, wow, where did all of this come from? I mean, this is it's fairly amazing. So here's the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, home, papers, and effects. And, you know, this is 18th century, so we got to expand that. And against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be searched. Not this widespread dragnet that is characteristic of totalitarian governments that want to know what everyone is thinking, if anyone is dissenting. Oh, wait a minute. We're just trying to get terrorists. We're trying to make sure that another 9/11 doesn't occur. Well, this is not what it's all about, friends. Just like the war in Iraq is not about spreading democracy to the Middle East, it's about oil. Let's face what's going on here. This is about extending the powers of a president that is pre-Constitution, pre-Bill of Rights. As you've probably heard any number of times on these broadcasts and other progressive hosts, that no way did ever that the FISA law stand in the way of a phone tap, because it had a provision in there. It had a provision in there that allowed for wiretaps without a warrant if it was an emergency. You didn't have to go, oh, no, it's Sunday, they're closed, we can't tap somebody that's going to blow up something. They could do it, and then they had to go and get a warrant. But we have to trust George W. Bush and Alberto Gonzalez that they're not going to tap their political enemies, not just their political opponents, like the Democrats. We have to make the assumption that they wouldn't do that to them, but also to the people that are virulently opposed, all the people out there that want impeachment, all the people that are involved in the anti-war movement, all the people that are involved in the peace and social justice movement. We have to depend on the good graces of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Alberto Gonzalez to not do a repressive or totalitarian tapping of our lines, to not make an enemies list that when the next event occurs, that's not going to be part of the roundup list. I don't like the sound of this. I'm sure you don't as well. And I was just reading this book called From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act by, I forgot who the hell wrote it. Someone, I interviewed the guy. And I can see the name in my mind, but Christopher, any of you know that? Or somebody Google it for me? From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act. And they're talking about the attempt of the Nixon government back in 1971 to repress the printing of the Pentagon Papers, and then it finally happened. And that's when Nixon sent in the plumbers to go into Daniel Ellsberg's offices to get information about him that they could smear him with. And how they initiated the FBI's COINTELPRO program that tried to disrupt all these civil rights and peace and social justice groups. But also, there was an enormous amount of other activity on the part of the repressive apparatus, the police apparatus of the United States, that although forbidden by law to operate in the United States, the CIA had used illegal break-ins, wiretaps, and mail openings to gather information on over 10,000 anti-war protesters and other dissidents. And then it came out that the FBI had bugged Martin Luther King's hotel room. And it says here that the most sensational story was aired 4 weeks later. Daniel Shore, this is in 1975, who was a correspondent for CBS Evening News then, that President Ford had told associates that the CIA had participated in assassinations. Look, government, you know, it's very fashionable on the liberal left to say that, to criticize the right for saying that the government can't solve any problems. The government can solve a lot of problems. And I never did get last week to the idea of a nanny state. Giuliani was on that liberals want a nanny state. Yeah, I think there ought to be a lot of things that governments take care of people. But on the other hand, the governments, the political state, is the most dangerous of institutions. And all we have to do is look back through the history of civilization going back 4,000 years ago. The political state arose 4,000 years ago as a totally repressive apparatus to secure the power and the privilege of the wealthy. And pretty much it's remained that throughout history, including today. Including under the Democrats, including under the Republicans. But what we want to do is expand its democratic qualities that are inherent in the American Constitution. And it's been a fight every step of the way. because the elites always want to maintain as much control as possible. And one of the ways that they can control is like any totalitarian government, is knowing who their enemies are. And also, just by me reading this, who knows what in the hell's going to go through your mind? You might think, whoa, I better stay out of this stuff. Because New York City, in the run-up to the Republican National Committee in 2004, did an enormous amount of illegal activity. The city and police department sent people, their agents, all over the country and placed under surveillance street theater companies, church groups, anti-war activists, environmentalists, and people opposed to the death penalty, globalization, and any government policy. 1,800 people were arrested in the most illegal substances, circumstances, rather. Chris Fannin, F-A-N-I-N, is correct. He was the author of the book that I was quoting from. From the Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act, thanks to who called that in. All right, we're going to go to break, and I definitely will come back and get your calls. We can't trust government. We can't trust the people in government. They themselves have to be controlled greatly. And this wiretapping just opens the door to repression and abuse. We got to fight it. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. It's the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. I'll get your calls when we come back. Promise. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you, broadcasting while he's gone on vacation. Yeah, the 16 Democrats that joined all the Republicans in the vile Lieberman in giving Bush permission to essentially legalizing the National Security Agency warrantless wiretaps took off the table one of the charges and evidence for the impeachment of George W. Bush. The memorial, and this is from impeachforpeace.org, the memorial goes on, and that's the legal language, to set forth that George W. Bush has admitted to ordering the National Security Agency to conduct electronic surveillance of American citizens without seeking warrants from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court of Review, duly constituted by Congress in 1978 in violation of Title 50, United States Code, Section 1805. Thank you, 16 Democrats, for just securing George W. Bush from impeachment. Here's Jake listening in Arcata, California. Jake, it's Peter Werbe from Mike Malloy. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Going great. Thanks for joining us.
You know, it's just awful to see these Democrats, after winning in a landslide last November, acting like they lost the election.
I mean,
what is the deal? We really need to ask this question of our so-called leaders there in Washington. You know, on the domestic spying issue, Bush has clearly been breaking the law for years. FISA has now been gutted, and a minority of the Democrats went along. What was 40-something in the House, 16 in the Senate? You know, who are these people, and what do they think they're doing by letting the public down? The public didn't vote for this. The public voted for Democrats so they would stand up to Bush, Peter.
It's all about reelection. I don't know how many of those Democrats are up for reelection. I'm sure all of them aren't. I don't know why they would have done that. I mean, it's this Democratic fear that people are too stupid to understand what the issues are here. People don't want to be wiretapped. And the American people in poll after poll have said that. And in fact, if they would, you know, people say, oh, don't be poll-driven. Well, now you can be poll-driven. Everything is against Bush and the Republicans. And what's needed is a stance of integrity, and at least 16 Democrats weren't willing to do it.
Yeah, and it's kind of that the Constitution is paid attention to. They take an oath to uphold the Constitution, not to be loyal to President Bush. I know the Republicans seem to think that's their loyalty oath is to do whatever President Bush says. But the Democrats should be smarter and should understand their loyalty is to the Constitution. And
absolutely.
If they let Bush and Cheney continue to commit these high crimes and misdemeanors, and they don't even put impeachment back on the table, I mean, some of these blue dog Democrats, these conservatives, like my own congressman here in California's 1st District, Mike Thompson, these people are opposed to impeachment. They think it's a waste of time. They think they won't have enough votes. Well, you know what? The Democrats have a majority in the House. They have the power to impeach Bush and Cheney. All they need to do is, you know, have some unity. But it's these conservative Democrats like Mike Thompson and these other people who just simply won't do the right thing and hold Bush and Cheney accountable.
Yeah, this is not a political thing. This is about defense of the Constitution. Jake, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, let's move on here to Jim, listening to The Quake in Santa Rosa. Hey, it's Peter Werby for Mike Malloy. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. When you had a caller call in and say the Republicans had a killer instinct.
Yeah.
They actually do. And if you care to look into the Wellstone death or JFK's death or any of these other events, they're not as portrayed. Even Watergate burglary wasn't necessarily as portrayed because apparently there were photographs from Dealey Plaza in 63 that were recovered that show George Herbert Walker Bush standing on the Texas School Book Depository steps in Dealey Plaza.
So you're saying that when our caller before said they have a killer instinct, you say it's not metaphorical but actual, huh?
It's called political terrorism. And if you look at the anthrax attacks, people were killed, okay? And what happened to that investigation? Nothing. Look at 9/11. They know. They know. We can prove. The 9/11 people can prove those buildings were blown up. So can the 500 first responders who went to the Keene Commission and were turned away. And under Zelikow's condition that 20 could testify, all of that testimony was sealed for reasons of national security.
Yeah.
The Bush administration blew up those buildings on 9/11, and Cheney hijacked the U.S. Air Force training exercises. And so when he says the Republicans have a killer instinct, damn straight. And they need to be sent a message.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. Well, I don't buy all of that. I know many of you do. And what is, I think what's interesting here, I don't know, what's another word other than interesting? I'll leave it at interesting, is that there are millions of people in this country that believe, as Jim does, that we have a government that is like, not, that doesn't follow the rules of the Constitution, but has been involved in a murderous process for almost 50 years. That that is so willing to circumvent the law and the Constitution that it'll go to any means, including assassination, creating domestic terrorism in order to cement its imperial rule. And whether one believes that or not, it's instructive. Maybe that's the word I was looking for, that so many people believe it. All right, let's go to Bruce. Bruce is listening on the Internet in California. Bruce, got about a minute. Go ahead, quick.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment on the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
All right, do it quick.
And all right, real quick. It's a quote from Henry Stimson, who was the Secretary of War under Harry Truman.
Right.
And he said, I have lived long enough to know that history is not what actually happened, but what is recorded as such. And that was his comment on the rationale that was used to justify the bombing.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah,
interesting indeed. Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you for that. I got to go to the top of the hour. Yeah, reading all this material from that that far away gives us an indication of what we can expect currently, what we can expect in the future. Critical thinking. That's what we need. We'll get George Carlin on the air, at least via recording, in our next hour. This is the Mike Malloy Show. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werby, not Mike Malloy. And we'll take more of your calls when we come back. 800-989-1480. Hang on. It's the Mike Malloy Show. I can say that better. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werby broadcasting for Mike for the rest of the week. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. Trying to recap what we've been talking about for the last 2 hours. It's pretty difficult. Everything from the justification of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're right in that week where the 42nd anniversary has occurred. Most of us have said, including my guest, including me, and I guess Mike last night, has said there's no real justification for it whatsoever, essentially a political move. Also talking about 16 Democrats crumpling on the wiretap bill and giving Bush an imperial presidency, the powers of an imperial presidency, when he's on the ropes. We don't get this at all. All right, a number of you are holding on, but I would like to do this because I want to get your reaction to something. I said it at the beginning of the show, and it's on my website, which I'd invite you to go to. Peter Werby, W-E-R-B as in boy, E. I was told to say that by a listener last week, .com. So it's PeterWerby.com, W-E-R-B-E. And this is a clip from a George Carlin HBO show. And it's called Who Owns You? And George Carlin, as I said earlier, should not be called a comedian. He is a commentator, a humorous commentator, but a lot of his stuff is just, there are good portions of his stuff is just deadly serious. So here's what I like to do. If you're on hold, stay on hold. You can still talk about everything that I see, the summary of what you would like to, and I still want to talk about that. And yet I want to get your reaction to this Carlin piece, because is it accurate? Is it overly cynical? And are things as hopeless as he makes out? Or is he really challenging us to do something, to not give in to this sense of hopelessness that sometimes so many of us feel that want to change the way this world operates and the way our country operates? Quality is not 100% what I would like because I took it off the internet. It sounds perfectly when you play it on my site. And there's also a lot of words beeped out. I reviewed it to make sure that I still have a radio career because we are talking about George Carlin. If you want to hear the unexpurgated version, go to my website or find it elsewhere online. All right, so this is 2 minutes. Hang on, and we'll be right back to get your calls. George Carlin on the Nova M Radio Network.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, the real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying. To get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they used to beat you over the head with all day long, where they tell you what to believe all day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich who don't give a about them. They don't give a about you. They don't give a about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant, because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Wow. George Carlin on the Mike Malloy Show, Peter Werby pushing the button for that one. And I don't, you know, I'll never accept that it's as hopeless as he says, that we'll never fight back, that we're as dumb as they think we are, that we don't have a choice, that the corporations do control everything. But critical thinking, programs like this that Mike Malloy has hosted for so long, this is what is the key. And listeners like you are the key to altering things. We have altered things throughout history. This has been true since the beginning. I mean, I was quoting before from the Constitution and said what geniuses the men were that put it together. But remember that they had a pretty narrow vision of who should be included in their American dream. It was white, propertied males. And we had to fight like hell all along the way, hundreds of years, in order to get a decent standard of living, to get the vote for women, to expand the vote even for unpropertied white men, to abolish slavery, to end wars, to form unions, to get a decent standard of living. Now, it's all starting to unravel under Bushco, this racket that is masquerading as a government. So, your opinion, and you can continue to talk about what you initially called for at 800-989-1480, but if you want to give an opinion on George Carlin on his HBO clip there, do that as well. I'm Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. This is John in Desert Hot Springs, California. Hey, John, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. The reason Nagasaki and Hiroshima were chosen, they were the focus of Operation Coronet, which was the planned U.S. invasion of the Japanese homeland.
Yeah.
And also, they were also the main military basing points for the Toko Offensive, which were 5,000 or so suicide ships and boats. And the actual planning for the operation assumed there'd be 100,000 killed, and then that terrible math of war, you get 10 to 1. That's where they have the 900, that figure of 1 million you mentioned earlier.
Well, I mean, I've heard that, but essentially these were civilian cities.
No.
Well,
they were the Japanese. They were two main. Did you have a map? We'll look on a map. They were the two major ports in the south of Japan that provided for the Japanese Navy.
Well, here, you know what? Almost all cities are civilian, right? That's what cities are.
I understand the ethics. There is no ethical reason we should have bombed them with an atomic bomb or a test. I agree with. I'm just saying people want to know, like, why were those two cities picked? Was
these were cities of opportunity that had a lot to do with the weather. It wasn't. They were never going to invade Japan. There was never any reason to invade Japan.
It was the culmination of the MacArthur's Pacific strategy and his whole thing. It was he ran up all those islands. Remember,
right.
Tarawa, Iwo Jima, Okinawa.
That's what he said. But they were never going to invade. They could have. They had submarines that had essentially cut it off. All the forces that were on those islands were. They didn't have any more supplies. The Japanese were defeated. It was just the military caste that was standing in the way, because they were loyal to the empire, the emperor.
Right, because he was a god, yeah.
Right, and some people think that the United States specifically insisted on this unconditional surrender, which they thought would mean the trial and execution of the emperor, in order to not have Japan. In fact, there was a fear. There was a fear that Japan was going to surrender before they could use the bomb. They wanted to use the bomb. They wanted to show that the United States was the sole arbiter of force in the world, and to shoot a shot across the bow of the Soviet Union, because there was all this stuff going on about who was going to control Eastern Europe and what have you. John, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate it. Well, we'll come back and talk more about it. There's, you know, these historical debates, I think, are significant. But do we learn from history? A lot of us do. Another good source on all of this is Howard Zinn's wonderful People's History of the United States. I'll bet you a lot of you have read that, or a lot of you have it on your shelf. This is the kind of thing you can just pull it off and look up Hiroshima, World War II, and find out all about this. All right, back to get your calls when we return. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Little Cashmere there from Led Zeppelin. At the Mike Malloy Show, Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. The Nova M Radio Network number is 800-989-1480. Tom writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. No question, the U.S. dominated the airspace over the entire nation of Japan at the end of World War II. I really wonder how much resistance to a land invasion would have transpired. He says, my father was in the 33rd Golden Cross Infantry Division and was staged for an invasion. He was in the Philippines for over 2.5 years in Wiri. He was surprised at how peaceful things were after they landed. Yeah, where was all this, you know, they were going to fight the U.S. invaders with sharp sticks on the beaches. Tom says, my father-in-law was in the Navy and was also in Japan after the atomic blast and saw Hiroshima from an aircraft. He told me he could not have dropped it. Yeah, there wasn't going to be the kind of resistance that has grown in mythology and the idea. The cynical argument that somehow killing 200,000 civilians in the most hideous manner saved the Japanese civilians from a greater toll just is a lot of nonsense. It's a political act. It was the first act of World War III, which fortunately has not occurred. Who knows, though, with people like Bush in power. Here's Robert. He's in Dallas, Texas, and he's listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Robert, hi. It's Peter Werby in for Mike.
Hello, Peter. I'm enjoying the show. First, I want to say about George Carlin, I don't agree with them about the American dream because I'm living it. My parents immigrated from Mexico, and I'm a first generation. I was born here. I went to public schools. I graduated. I went to a public college, worked a part-time job, and I ended up getting an engineering degree, and now I'm working in living an all right life. So I don't agree that everything is as doom and gloom as he says.
Well, I don't think it's as doom, but wait a minute, Robert. You know, I'll tell you, my life financially and professionally has never been better since under George W. Bush. So can we extrapolate from that everything is getting better?
Well, I think better depends on your perception of better and depends on the topic.
A lot of people come from Mexico and do real well. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But we're talking about a shrinking middle class, a nation, and people in it overwhelmed with both social debt and individual debt. But go ahead.
No, definitely there's a lot of problems. But the reason I was calling is that, in my opinion, and I'm not a conservative, I consider myself an independent, but I think in a way progressives are in denial with regards to our history. We are an empire, and our history is littered with death, violence. And one of the things I've heard Mike Malloy and other talkers say is that I want my country back. But in reality, it's never been a golden age of progressive ideals. There's always been slavery. There was the civil rights issue. We've never been any type of utopia with regards to some of the progressive ideals of today.
I agree with you completely, and I think particularly the 90s, the Clinton era, Clinton-Gore era, is so oversold, to be sure. We weren't having a war like this. We had better economic times, but certainly there was still both foreign and domestic problems. Hello, NAFTA. Hello, Iraq sanctions. Hello, doing nothing about the environment.
Exactly. One of the other points I'd like to make is one of the things that I hear about the Democratic candidates or progressive candidates is a lot of times they throw the same jargon in. What they should say is we don't want to go back to a ideal period in America. We want a new America. That's what a campaign should be. It should be we want something totally new that's never happened. But usually when you hear the political talkers, they'll throw in, we want to go back to the Clinton era or this other golden age.
Or the Reagan era, or, right,
yeah.
Either, something like that. But, Robert, I couldn't agree with you more that we have to envision an entirely new country and an entirely new world, and I don't hear that from any of the candidates. But what I said earlier was I always hope – I mean, I vote for the lesser of the two evils. It was extraordinarily hard for me to vote for John Kerry. I mean, he, you know, ran such a weak campaign and advocated so many things that I disagreed with. But it was the idea of keeping Bush out. Who knew that he would steal another election? But thank you. You're absolutely right, and I agree with you completely. Thank you so much for joining us. How about that? Do you agree with me? And that wasn't any golden age. Take America. I don't like that at all. Take America back. We never had it. I mean, the common people, you and me. George Carlin, who's got a lot, he's got almost as much money as probably as the elites, but his soul, his heart is with the average person, the common people, the middle class and the working class. We've had to fight to get the little bit that we have, our little homes and the little bit of security that we think we had, and a little bit of control over what happens in our lives and in, you know, hopefully even in the world. And this is a world and a country run by elites. It's been like that since the political state arose 4,000 years ago. And we've gotten a little toehold. We've gotten the possibility, the ideological framework for the people really being in control. And we're nowhere near that right now. But that's what we have to move through. We can't depend on politicians. We can't depend on leaders. We have to do it ourselves. You know that bumper sticker, if the people lead, the leaders will follow? Well, that's true. They'll start talking about civil rights. They'll start talking about anti-war. They'll start talking about health programs. But it's up to us. It's only up to us, or forget it. It's back to the 19th century for us. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480. It's the Nova M Radio Network. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480, the Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike. Well, the Pentagon spending bill, there's hardly anything about this in the papers. Found this little note that the military appropriations bill passed the House early Sunday by a vote of 395-13, almost $500 billion for the Pentagon. That doesn't include $147 billion in Iraq war funds that Bush Co. has requested so he can pay all of his buddies more of our tax dollars, right? War costing $12 billion a month there, Iraq and Afghanistan. There goes our national health program, right? But all of his friends' corporations will do just fine because this money isn't lost. It goes somewhere. It's taken from us. We work. Taxes are extracted, and then it goes to these firms that create all the weapons of war, and then once everything is destroyed, then they rebuild it. Not very well, but it doesn't really matter because they get paid. That's what it's all about. So it's a huge racket. It says it's a government, but actually it's 100% racket. Most governments are rackets. Most governments have been rackets. A few of them begin to give a little to the people, as I was saying as we were going out. They give a little because the people demand it. And when we've demanded it, hey, they say, whoa, these people are getting mad, so we better give them a little. We better give them the vote, or we better abolish slavery. We better end this war. Not this war yet, but like the Vietnam War and all that. So to that extent, we were playing the George Carlin clip before. They think they can get away with anything. They have such power. They have such privilege. They are so arrogant. Doesn't matter how dumb they are, how many mistakes they make generation after generation. These are the rulers. They have such a preponderance of power and wealth that they don't, when they make a mistake, they don't have to pay for it. They even break laws. They commit crimes, and there is no penalty whatsoever. When they do commit crimes, then they get pardoned. And then they'll come back in the next administration. So they'll be in the Jeb Bush administration of 2012 or 2016 or something like that, unless we move. Patriots, it's a call to resistance. All right. Let me give this number and not my Detroit number. 800-989-1480. Listening to KSAC in Folsom, California. It's Steve. Steve, it's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Peter. Hey, it's an honor to speak with you.
Well, it is an honor to speak to you.
The thing about George Carlin, there's always been a ruling elite, and the ruling elite have been the most successful when they had something in common with the average people. And when they've diverged too much from that, there's been trouble, and it's happened before with the Great Depression. And before the Great Depression, in 1927, the levees broke in New Orleans, just like Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And there were bodies floating in the street, and it started a massive movement among the people. And from that movement came FDR.
It took. Think about that. It took a collapse of that magnitude to bring in progressive social legislation.
And a catalyzing event, you know, unions in response to targeting of employees and the loss of employee rights, you know, those things come about because change is needed, but it takes, unfortunately, it seems to take some catalyzing event. But one of the big reason I called was about the illegal wiretaps.
Sure.
And Bush is lying, and not only is he lying, there is no need for...
Wait a minute, Steve. I mean, he's always lying. So
okay.
What? You got to be specific.
He's lying about terrorists using the public phone system.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There is no need for anybody. I mean, we're talking about people who presumably know something about computers.
Yeah.
Anybody who knows anything about computers knows that they can use virtual private networks, that they can hop on a wireless access point anywhere that's non-secured anywhere. And they can have encrypted, they can use free software called Asterisk, set up their own little private telephone exchange over the Internet. And there's no way the government would even know about those calls. Not only that, if the government did know about those calls using 168-bit encryption, there's absolutely no way that even the military could crack the encryption of those calls.
We don't even know how useful any of this is, because remember at some point the FBI said that the NSA was wiretapping so many millions of calls that when they fed them possibilities, it was in the tens of thousands, and there's no way they can look at it. And Steve, you're absolutely right. Hey, Osama, it's Peter. Yeah, okay, we're going to do that next Wednesday. You know, we've got the stuff, and here's where it's going to be. Remember when they were flashing all those orange and green and yellow and red alerts of that nonsense a few years ago?
I had a conversation like this with a colleague at work, and it got back to the same old thing. Oh, well, I'm okay. I have nothing to worry about. I'm not afraid if the government is looking at me. So I asked him, I said, well, are you in a labor union? Are you an environmentalist? Are you a political activist? Do you dissent? You know, that's just what we really have to worry about is the future.
So, yeah, exactly. And some of these people would say no, but it's that old thing. First they came for the communists, then they came for the unionists, and I didn't say anything. And when they finally came for me, there wasn't any. Look, I don't think that, who knows? Maybe they are. But I think one of the main aspects of this power grab, this destruction of constitutional guarantees by Bush Co., is intimidation. That's one factor. And also, they are setting the stage for the transformation from a republic to an empire. I mean, we've always had an imperial outreach, but the facade of democracy is going away. But we don't even get Julius Caesar. We don't get a Caesar. You know, we get Caligula and Nero right off the bat. I mean, think about Minneapolis and the subways and the steam explosion and all that. Hey, the Roman Empire collapsed, and the viaducts at least have withstood a couple of thousand years. This infrastructure is beginning to crumble, and they're tossing all this money to their war industry buddies. All right, Steve, thank you so much.
Thanks.
That's an excellent point that you made. That you know, remember the other thing they used to say all the time? They heard chatter on the Internet. And it was really this racist depiction that there are these Arabs, if you think about the racist caricature of them in films, you know, they're going, you know, like that. And they could imagine them, you know, kill Americans, kill infidel, like that. So it was chatter. That was the chatter that they heard on the Internet. That's baloney. They weren't hearing anything. They're lying, as usual. Tim's listening to XM in Missouri. I'm sorry, it's Tina. Tina, hi.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing tonight?
You're not the woman who was criticizing my grammar, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm okay. Tina Richards.
Okay. No, somebody wrote in named Tina and said they weren't listening to me because my grammar was bad.
No, actually, I was on your show before. I absolutely adore your show. I am at home in Salem, Missouri. Normally, I'm in Washington, D.C., and it's funny that you played that George Carlin tape because it's like every day I go in and talk to members of Congress, talk to the senators, challenge them, and to do the right thing. And the thing is that we're outnumbered with defense contractors in their offices more than people like me who, you know, want the war to end, that want a democracy. And until more people start rising up and start participating in their government, we're getting exactly what we're participating in.
Sure. Well, think about this, Tina. The American people, by every poll, want the war ended. The majority of Iraqis want us out of there. The majority now of the American troops want to leave. And so this, you would think they would do this. But
you would think. My son did two tours over in Iraq, and he came back 80% disabled.
Yay.
And the point is that the Democrats, when you're there on the Hill and you dress like them, they talk about everything in political terms. There is no humanity on Capitol Hill.
Well,
it's all about...
Yeah, I was going to say, think about the fact that the end of the war would be a financial disaster from the people that are profiting from it. We've spent $500 billion. It's going to, even if we ended the war tomorrow, somehow, you can't do this, you could get every troop and every piece of machinery out of there. It would still wind up costing us somewhere close to $2 trillion. And this is all going to come from you. It's all going to come from me. It's all going to come from our neighbors. It's going to come from our communities and our cities and our states. I don't know about Missouri. Michigan, where I live, is hurting and having to do all sorts of cutbacks. But we're going to have to keep paying this mess. And again, it's not lost in the laundry. Like, you know, you had a $20 bill and it got shredded or something like that. This is all, every dollar spent is winding up not in someone's pocket, but in the pockets of these huge corporations that are part of, in very precise terms, the military-industrial complex. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. And that's what it gets really frustrating that there's not more people rising up. You know, September 15th, we're doing a major march in Washington, D.C., and we will be...
September 15th? There's one September 29th. That's not it?
Well, no. September 15th is day General Petraeus gives his report.
Okay.
And so a number of organizations, mine is Grassroots America, Iraq Vets Against the War, Veterans for Peace, a number of organizations are calling for people to come to Washington, D.C. On September 15th, on the day he gives his report. Say we will not have silence in D.C. on this day.
Okay, there's also a big one scheduled for, so that's a Saturday also, right?
This Saturday is the day Petraeus delivers his report.
Right, gotcha. Sometimes I think it's good that there's lots of demonstrations, and anyway, I was going to say, gee, don't tell me the anti-war movement is split again, but since
we have, Iraq That's Against War is doing
I hear you, but wait, but I'm telling you, there's another big one scheduled with lots of sponsors 2 weeks later, but, you know, we can bring out a million people, and they'll even, like, nationalistic puppet radio, NPR, will report that we've had tens of thousands, even though there's hundreds of thousands. Tina, let me get some more calls.
I just wanted to let you know that on this march, we're doing a massive die-in of 4,000 people, and then we're having days of actions afterwards.
That sounds great. That's what it takes, citizen involvement. Direct action will get you satisfaction.
Direct action. SEPT15.org. Go there, and we've got all sorts of things lined up.
Thanks, Tina.
Thank you.
Bye now. Yeah, that's an old slogan of the industrial workers of the world. IWW.org. Direct action will get you satisfaction. Peter Werby with you. We got one more segment. We'll get your call in, particularly the people that are holding on right now. So we might even get a couple more. You want to take a chance? There's open line for you. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back to our final segment of the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike. Let's go to our phones. I want to try to get everybody on that's been waiting here. Here's Bruce listening to KPOJ in Eugene, Oregon. Bruce, Peter Werby on Mike's show. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Hey.
I wanted to recommend a author for you to get on your show for an interview. He wrote Mussolini's Italy. His name is R.J.B. Bosworth.
Now, is that a guy that's been emailing me? I mean, this guy's an apologist for Mussolini and fascism.
Well, it was just so eerie how similar Mussolini's policies and the neocons are.
Well, maybe I'm thinking the wrong guy then, because there's somebody's been emailing me telling me that fascism under Mussolini was okay and that, you know, he made the trains run on time, one of those things, and that he was misunderstood and he wasn't a Hitler or anything like that. So,
well, after reading his book, it was just so spooky.
So he's not saying that Mussolini was a great man.
Well, I think he's a historian. I think he's putting it, you know, from a historian's point of view. But if you read his book, I mean, if you read, you know, Mussolini's policies and the way he's built the society and et cetera, and then you look at what's going on with the neocons, it's almost a carbon copy.
Huh.
And it's very scary to see the comparison.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Bruce. Thanks for joining us. Let's go to Gene. Gene's listening to The Quake in San Francisco. Hi, Gene. It's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Oh, Peter, thanks for this great show.
Well, thank you for being part of it.
Yeah. I wanted to address this idea of who is Bush spying on.
Okay.
And I think he's spying on anyone who undercuts the Bush co-profits.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like anybody who doesn't want to eat meat, vegans and vegetarians, you know, or anybody who's a peace activist who would get in the way of the war profiteering. But the problem is that what we're going to hear when he starts, it starts becoming more public, he's going to give us his definition, and these people would fit his definition of extremists and subversives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to reject. We have to reject their terminology, the Bush terminology.
Indeed. Have you ever seen the film V for Vendetta?
Not yet, no.
Well, it's available on DVD now. Actually, people get mad at me because it's a big favorite of people on the left, because it talks about how, you know, it's England in the future. It's a totally repressive, totally controlled totalitarian society, yet people revolt finally. And I thought, I have to start it this way. I really enjoyed the movie, but as a film, I thought it was awful. but it gets your blood pumping, and the bad guys are really bad, and the good guys win, and all that. Although I'm giving away the ending.
Oh, good, the good guys win.
Yes, and it's sort of a combination between what I used to say, the Mark of Zorro. Oh yeah, the Mark of Zorro, Batman, and Phantom of the Opera. But it's an enjoyable film.
And thanks so much for addressing the atomic bomb drops. I'd like to talk more about that, but I know you have other callers. Thanks so much, Peter.
Thank you, Gene. Bye. And we'll go to Vera. Vera's listening to The Quake as well in San Leandro, California. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Peter. Getting back to that caller a while ago, a man you know, talking about the Twin Towers being blown up. Uh-huh. Well, I personally believe all the facts as given in Loose Change, the DVD, and even though they admit that Flight 93, they don't have all the story on that. And then anyway, he didn't go into all that, but you said you don't quite believe in that, so I just wondered, what do you believe?
Well, you know, I did a show, and this is an indirect way of answering, last November 22nd here in Detroit, and I wanted people to tell me who they thought was responsible for the murder of John Kennedy. Was it Oswald? Was it the CIA? Was it the mafia? Was it, you know, whoever? So, and I said, I'm not even screening any calls. Just tell me, you know, who do you think? And it was call after call after call. Mostly it was like, you know, intergovernmental thing, the CIA. And they said to me finally, well, Pete, you never said, who do you think killed Kennedy? And I said, yeah. I have no idea. I know the official story is a load of.
Right.
And the same thing here. I mean, I've seen that film. I mean, they sort of dropped the ball when they say that the flights that did not crash in Pennsylvania or did not hit the Pentagon landed in Cleveland. Where the hell did they come up with that from? So where are these hundreds of people? You know, they killed them all or something like that. But there's too many things in there that don't make sense. I absolutely agree.
Well, I feel the point is it was pure demolition, and there's too many facts that really are indisputable about the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. And, you know, I feel strongly like they imply or state, or I don't know if they say it outright, that Bush is behind it. At least he enabled it. And,
well,
and more
he knew something was happening.
Radio minimizes on that, and that's enabling Bush to do all this damage that is occurring right now. That's
Vera, we'll talk more about this tomorrow because we're at the end of the show. Thanks for being our last caller. Thanks a lot to Ian Huff. He's at the headquarters of Nova M Radio Network in Phoenix. Couldn't do it without him. I'm Peter Werby. I'll be sitting in for Mike again. Mike and Kathy and little Molly off on vacation. Thanks to all of you for listening and calling, and I'm back tomorrow night.